You can help WYXR by making a year-end tax-deductible donation. Go to newyear.wyxr.org and give right now. Got no place to go. Can't find a lover. Can't find no friend. Can't call it so-and-so. Put your hand on the radio. Can you feel it? Down to your toes. Can you feel it? That's how it goes. Can you feel it? Lord only knows. Can you feel it? Put your hand on the radio. Ow! Ow! Down on my knees. I'm begging you, please. Here comes your tea. No, 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 no. Here comes your tea.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. As I said, welcome to the Thacker Mountain Radio Hour. We're at the historic Lyric Theater right here on the square in Oxford. A beautiful evening and a fine crowd. Appreciate y'all being here. From Knoxville, Tennessee, we've got some electronica music. It's going to mess with your mind as if some of us need help, right? Feral Kitty is here. Feral Kitty, some very interesting music. We've also got the world-renowned Russ College a cappella choir, some 55 voices. Yes. And our author tonight, he's got a book, a brand new book out, very Memphis-centric, set all in Memphis, and it is a humdinger. Ace Atkins is here with Don't Let the Devil Ride. Fun book, fun book. Well, we want to kick it off with the best live radio band in the land. We've got the big band here tonight, y'all, the Yellow Bushwhackers. We'll be right back. Yellow Bush Records, y'all let him hear you one more time, please. Our house band with the horns and, of course, Mary Frances Massey. Thank you so much. All right. Oh, good. My kind of lighting. All right, Christina. Christina Horn, our stage name, Feral Kitty.
Boy, how do you know my name?
That's quite a name. You don't seem feral. You seem perfectly unferal.
There's a story behind the name.
I bet there is.
Do you want to hear it?
Do we have a minute?
I'll do it real quick. I took a desk job, a corporate desk job, during the pandemic because you can't play music. And with the first week of being there, they were like, you need to learn how to pee in the litter box because you've never been in a cubicle before. So I got the nickname Feral Kitty. Like, first week I was there, I couldn't sit still at a desk. I was emailing the CEO. Doing bad stuff, getting in trouble like a feral cat.
It's moments like this I live for, ladies and gentlemen.
You brought it up.
Yes, I did. Well, you named yourself Feral Kitty. Now, let's make up and let's go ahead and hear some great music. Y'all, please welcome Feral Kitty.
You bet.
worries. We all leave our love behind. You guys are like a really nice audience. Thank you so much. People don't usually know what to do with me when I show up in nice establishments like this with beautiful people working here. I am Feral Kitty, but I'm a classically trained pianist who got into producing.
It's what I want.
It's what I want. There's nothing wrong with what I want. Thank you, guys. Thank you. Would you like to hear one more? I can't afford a choir. For inviting me to be part of your show. Thank you.
Great job. Feral Kitty, y'all, one more time. Yeah, yeah. otherwise known as Christina Horn from Knoxville, Tennessee. She has an album out called Hot Lights. You can look for Hot Lights. That's some wonderful stuff. I started floating back there, y'all, and that's not a good thing. Sometimes I won't come back. I'd like to remind you that you're listening to the Thacker Mountain Radio Hour. You're hearing us on WUMS, University of Mississippi, WYXR, Community Radio in Memphis, the good folks at MPB, Mississippi Public Broadcasting. Yeah, gotta love them. The good folks at Alabama Public Radio, WUTC in Chattanooga, WUOT in Knoxville, Tennessee, home of Christina, yeah. And KNCE True Taos Radio in Taos, New Mexico. What they must think. I also like to thank the Lyric Oxford, the good folks at Red Panther, Cathead Distillery, Wonderbird Spirits, the good folks at Southside Gallery, Yotnapatawpha Arts Council, Visit Mississippi, the Mississippi Arts Commission, Square Books, Freeland Drum Lab, Larry and Michael Johnson Family Foundation, the Carol Etheridge Family Foundation, Dr. Stephen and Gay Case, Snooky Mary Lou Williams Foundation of Water Valley, Mississippi. We love them. Also, our pop-up folks that helped us out here in the lobby this evening, Fit the Bill, Pinewood Press, and Link with Wink. Thank y'all for being here and joining us. Yeah, absolutely. Link with Wink. Sounds like one of your plots, pal. All righty, our next guest is Ace Atkins. He is here with his 30th book, ladies and gentlemen. 30. This one's called Don't Let the Devil Ride. It takes place and is fully just soaked in the town of Memphis, Tennessee. Our private investigator is named Porter Hayes. Some of you Memphis aficionados will know what that means. Porter Hayes digs in here and finds out that there's a woman's husband is missing and his business just seems to have vanished from the face of the earth. There's a lot of subplots, a lot of fun, a lot of barbecue, a lot of whiskey, cigar smoke, and Stacks music in this book, y'all. Please welcome Ace Atkins.
Thanks very much, Jim. I appreciate it. Or you're talking about Stacks Records, cigars, whiskey, basically my autobiography is what this book is.
But enough about you, right? You know, as I was reading along, it helps, of course, that I do know you, but I just was shaking my head. I couldn't help but think, man, you are having some fun writing this book. For example, at one point, the damsel in distress said something, and Porter Hayes says, hold on, I'm coming.
And I told Jim there's only a certain amount of people that understand that joke. They understand, one of the great, great songs that Porter Hayes, the great songwriting team, did.
In the soul music world, Porter Hayes is equivalent to Lennon McCartney. It was David Porter and the great
and
Isaac
great
Hayes.
Great Isaac Hayes, yeah, that was it. That was it. Yeah. And they created so much Soul Man and
Something
Is
Man,
Wrong With
Hold
My Baby.
On,
hold on, I mean, just like forever. I mean, I think David Porter has so many Grammys, he's probably got them in his, his basement somewhere.
Overflowing. Trick or treat.
Exactly. Just a legend. Absolute legend.
So you name your detective, who happens to be a black Vietnam veteran who drives a Mercedes with a cassette player in it. I love that. You name him Porter Hayes.
That's it. That's
and
it.
And tell us the story of David Porter when he actually found... He's still alive, by the way. Tell us.
David Porter is still alive. And again, part of this legendary songwriting team. If you guys know the wonderful Sam and Dave, those were the songwriting team that brought all that stuff to life. In fact, there's a true story that in Memphis, before Sam and Dave would come in and record at Stax Records... David Porter and Isaac Hayes would test out their material. And a lot of people kind of thought of them as the real Sam and Dave. And then Sam and Dave was the persona that would go on later. But they were just absolutely incredible, amazing. And so I had an experience where I was doing an interview on the CBS affiliate in Memphis. And I started talking about this character, Porter Hayes, and being really representational of Memphis and, based on, experiences I had in Memphis, and he'd been a Vietnam veteran, and He had been around since 1968. He had actually been there when the King assassination happened. And the woman who was interviewing me stopped me right there. She said, "Is this a tribute to David Porter and Isaac Hayes?" And I said, "Yes." And she kind of nodded, and I didn't think much about it. And then later I found out she was very close to David Porter, and he actually showed up at my book signing at Novel in Memphis, which was truly one of the coolest moments of my life, where, you know, you kind of think, I'm not worthy. But how great to meet a guy that inspired me so much to create a character based on this music.
You think he's maybe in his 80s or so now?
I think David is probably late 70s, early 80s, and has more energy and enthusiasm and working on new projects than a guy probably 20 years old. Amazing person.
Man, that is so wonderful. You have, again, it's so Memphis-centric, but there's a lot of Ole Miss in this book.
And there is.
And you just say Ole Miss without even bothering to ID for readers who might be in Utah or whatever.
Well, I think the real, you know, I talk about Porter Hayes, but the real star of this book is a woman named Addison McKellar. And the premise of this book is essentially about a woman that marries very early, like, you know, several people, I guess, that go to Ole Miss. They get married very young.
Wait, what?
And then about 10, 15 years later, they wake up and say, who is this person that I married, and what do I exactly know about him? And in Addison's case, the question may be is, not only is he a bad guy and not a great husband, but he actually may be an international arms dealer and a seriously, seriously bad dude. And so that's where the question comes in. But Addison has a lot of very fond memories of her great days at Ole Miss and riding around the square and taking shows in at the, you know, at the Hoka and at, you know, different places. And so that was very, very key to this book.
And speaking of the international element, you do have international intrigue in this book. There is an
yeah, I do. There. I do, and it's hard to explain. I talk about it. I say, you know, where the entry point is, you know, a woman trying to find out where her husband has gone, where he's been missing for 5-6 days. She doesn't know where he is. Ends up going down to his place of work, and then finding out that the place of work doesn't even house this office. She, you know, asks questions of where he is, that kind of thing. But yeah, that's, you know, a jumping off point where I try to talk about there's Porter Hayes in Memphis, and there's barbecue, and there's references to Ole Miss, but there's also Russian contract killers. There's also a French arms dealer. And so, you know, it's like I have scenes that are set, you know, partially mentioning in Oxford and in Memphis and South Haven, but also in Rome and in Istanbul and Paris. And so it's all the great places.
I know that you're one of those writers who likes to go to the setting that they're writing about.
And definitely.
If possible, have the meal that the character's having. Did you do any travel abroad for this book?
You know, there's a character named Gaudier, who's one of my favorite characters in the book, and he's a French arms dealer that gets kind of rooked into this kind of crazy scheme and international intrigue that's happening, and what Addison's husband, Dean McKellar, is doing and crossing paths with Porter Hayes and that kind of thing. And I have spent a decent amount of time in Paris, and so when he mentions certain restaurants or places he's been and his experiences, don't ask me to speak French, but I definitely understood what his motivation's worth.
And so in 1 minute we'll be in Paris, the next minute we're at the arcade restaurant on whatever it is.
That's right, or maybe passing the Cracker Barrel down in South Haven. It's all very, very local.
You're well-rounded, Ace Atkins.
Thank you very much, Jim.
And by the way, what a great name Ace Atkins is. I mean, and that's actually your name. That's not a stage name. You're Ace Atkins.
I am, and in fact, when I became a newspaper reporter many years ago, you know, almost 30 years ago, the editor who hired me said, "Don't you want to change that just to sound a little bit more professional?"
He hasn't written 30 novels, you know. Speaking of your name, your dad was a professional football player, so you moved around almost like a military brat, right?
We did. I mean, I think that's why I'm comfortable writing about so many different places. I mean, I've been in this area. I've lived in Oxford almost 25 years. I've been going to Memphis almost 30 years. I know this area very well, but I've also, it's hard to keep track. I mean, I lived in San Francisco growing up. I lived in Detroit. My dad worked for the NFL, and his claim to fame was when he had retired from coaching, he became a personnel scout and scouted new talent, and he convinced the 49ers there was this guy from Valley that was amazing, a guy that no one had ever heard of named Jerry Rice. And my dad's claim to fame was he was the guy that brought Jerry Rice to the 49ers.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very proud of my dad.
That's very cool. And you yourself played college football. I'll get off football in a second, I promise.
That's all right. That's all right.
You played college
football. You can't escape it. It's been 30 years.
Well,
you can't escape it.
For some of the audience.
It's like the mafia. It pulls you back in.
College football is like the mafia.
It is. It may be the plot of my next book.
Well, speaking of uncovering secrets, you have in this book, Don't Let the Devil Ride, you pass along the fact that Ole Miss sororities maintain a file of all the final exams going back to the 1970s to help their members.
I know. I don't know where I come up with this stuff, Jim. It just comes to me.
We're
going to
blow the lid off this scandal. Is that true or not?
I don't know. I cannot confirm.
You haven't been rummaging around in sorority houses?
Well, that's a different story. That's something else, completely different.
All right. But you have that in this book. I thought it was funny. And you also have some, obviously you can't get away from it, Elvis in this book. And you do you hang out in Memphis a lot. I'm just wondering, what do you think of this Elvis phenomenon? You're in a unique position over the years, and the people that come for so-called Dead Week,
it can
be a little ghoulish sounding. What's your take on the whole?
Yeah, I think you cannot. I will meet people, especially friends of mine or people that I know from Europe. They'll come in and they'll say, "Well, you know, I don't want to do Memphis or Graceland. I don't want to see Graceland. I want to go to Clarksdale and I want to see this, but you know, I don't want to see Elvis. That's too overblown." But you cannot, in truth, write about Memphis without writing about Elvis. And I am a huge Elvis fan. I am an Elvis crazy nut. To get very deep local with you, I was a lifetime member of Graceland 2. So, you know, I'm that deep into that kind of stuff. But I think Elvis, you know, it's interesting. There's recently been a story that was saying the Beatles continue to gain new followers, but essentially Elvis has not gained the kind of traction that people would have expected, and that's kind of dwindling his fan base. So, yeah, but I love Elvis. I love going to Graceland, and one of the characters in the book is named Joanna Grayson, and she had her claim to fame all these years was in the late 60s. She was Elvis's co-star in Easy Come, Easy Go, and when her acting career kind of dries up and she's late in her late 60s, early 70s, she moves to Memphis to be part of Death Week. She moves to Memphis to be able to do book signings and talk about her up close and personal relationship with Elvis Presley, because anyone who ever met Elvis or shook his hand is famous. And, meet all those people. They're still there. If you knew Elvis, then your life is set.
Yeah. When I read Easy Come, Easy Go, I said, man, that sounds just like an Elvis movie, but it's probably not an Elvis movie. And I Googled it, and it really is an Elvis movie.
Well, I told you, Jim, I said that essentially I wanted to choose the worst Elvis movie, the one that no one had seen, because they wouldn't know if Joanna Grayson was the star or not. So,
and also because of you in this book, this afternoon I listened to the soundtrack to Clambake. So, because it's in the book, and it's got some good tunes on it.
Clambake? Going to a clam bake.
Well, we've whetted our appetite. Do you mind reading a little bit from this book?
I would be honored.
It is a fun read.
Thank you, Jim.
Ace Atkins, Let the Devil Ride, y'all.
So I'm going to start this reading kind of in motion. This is when the character Addison McKellar, who is an Ole Miss grad and ended up getting into a marriage. She's not sure exactly where what's happened, and her husband has disappeared. He's been gone for 5 or 6 days. She cannot locate him. She cannot get the secretary to locate him. She goes to the office and just raises hell about, you know, who are these people in my husband's office and what's going on here, and she ends up getting arrested. Her car gets towed. She ends up downtown Memphis and finally gets out. And now she's at, you guys know, of course, the famous 201 Poplar, where everything happens. She's sitting there at Addison, sitting there at 201 Poplar, waiting for her sister-in-law, Libby, who is also a Ole Miss grad, to pick her up. So I'm going to just start in motion right here with Addison and Libby. Addison waited on the steps of 201 Poplar for Libby to pick her up from this effing nightmare. She had called her for more than an hour ago, and if her sister-in-law didn't hurry up, she'd miss getting her kids from school. How much of a loser would she be then? She'd lost her husband, her SUV, two of her credit cards weren't working, and now she was standing amongst criminals and being brought into jail and hustled out by slick attorneys in shiny suits and two-tone shoes. While she waited, Addison tried Dean again out of habit, at least 10 times. She tried Amanda again, that's his secretary, and not surprisingly, went right to voicemail. Her message had been both truthful and nasty. If you don't effing call me back right now, I'll make sure you can't get a GD job cleaning the toilets at Walmart. Well, hell, she tried being polite so many times, maybe being nasty would light a fire under her, as Daddy used to say. And then when all else failed, she tried calling Daddy, but his caregiver said he was down with a nap until his shows came on. Daddy never missed a double helping of Gunsmoke and Bonanza in the afternoon. Some of the older men are like, yes, I know exactly what that is. She wondered how it'd feel, how he'd feel about his only daughter getting standing outside 201 Poplar, handing out cigarettes to vagrants, streetwalkers, and pickpockets like G.D. Mother Teresa. Finally, Libby pulled up in her new black G-Wagon, merrily tooting her horn, a woman in a short sequined skirt and a bright red bikini top eyed her, drawing on a cigarette, and said, "Baby, that's a nice ride. You must be doing real good work for your man." Addison said, "Excuse me?" She said, "Oh, shoot. Don't pretend that you and me ain't in the same hustle. What you on, meth? Man, that's some nasty-ass stuff." Addison pulled on her big Fendi sunglasses and headed down the wide stairs. Libby had parked in front of ASAP bail bonds. "We put your feet back on the street ASAP." Which is a real place. She dodged a few cars out on the busy road and walked around to the back of the G-Wagon and got inside. The air conditioner blew some welcome fresh air in her face. Addison peeled off her hoodie and sat in the front seat with only her sports bra fanning her sweaty chest. "No offense," Libby said, "but you look awful." "Thank you," Addison said, and sunk down in her seat, closed her eyes. "No questions, please. Just drive. I have to pick up the kids in an hour." "Where's your car?" Impounded, Addison said. "We'll get it later." Libby knocked the G-Wagon into gear, made an illegal U-turn right in front of police headquarters, Addison slinking down lower in the leather seats. From the radio, a cool-voiced public radio announcer explained the last set had been the chamber piece by Rachmaninoff, his voice so smooth and calm that she wanted to punch him right in the nose. "Where have you been?" Addison said. "I've been waiting over an hour." "I was in the middle of an appointment with my therapist," Libby said. "We were talking about setting boundaries and how bad I am about saying no. But then you kept calling and my phone kept on buzzing and I knew it was an emergency, right? That's what this is, right? It's an emergency." "Look at me," Addison said. "Look at my face. Look at how I'm dressed. I'm a GD mess. I guess I was expecting to be arrested. I wasn't expecting to be arrested for disorderly conduct. Oh, God, I smell like jail. My head is splitting and I need a cocktail." "Holy crap," Libby said. "Now we're talking. My day sucked too," Addison says. "Are you even listening to me?" Libby had always been stick thin. Today she looked so thin that you could see her collarbone sticking out of her low-cut peasant top, just like the little girl wore in Addison's old paperback copy of Heidi. She had a long face and huge brown eyes and hair. And when she wasn't so perfectly styled and carefully made up, she looked mousy and plain, and she could pass for a high schooler. Her trinket bracelet, baubles from all the cities she'd visited, jangled on her wrist. The radio announcer announced that they were continuing with Rachmaninoff's saddest and most haunting melody. "For F's sake, could you please change the station?" Addison said. Addison remembered when she and Libby were at Ole Miss and would circle the square in their little red car, blaring Wilson Phillips' "Hold On." Jesus, they looped around and around as if something they had somewhere important to go. Addison had, for two brief years, working in the publicity office of a big publisher in New York. 1 year assigned to this god-awful thriller writer who boasted 33 books in the Richard Jones series, better known in-house as the Big Dick Jones series, because he was the author always pointing out the hero's manly height and weight and incredible stamina in the sack. She had a killer in the Upper West Side and two of the best roommates in the world, all of it a fuzzy history, after she met Dean McKellar at a Christmas party at P.J. Clark's in 1994. What happened? Thank you very much.
Ace Atkins, one more time, y'all. Ace Atkins, the man. 30th novel, this one is from William Morrow. And Ace will join us after the show at the Square Books table. Sign your copy of Don't Let the Devil Ride. All right. We don't need a beach right now, y'all, because I think we're getting ready to go to a little bit of heaven. Yeah, the Rust College Acapella Choir. This choir formed in the night. Yes. This choir was first formed in the 1930s by Miss Natalie Doxey. That's a great name for North Mississippi, Natalie Doxey. Members are accepted by audition only. They call themselves world-renowned. They've earned it. They've been to Europe, South Africa. They've been to Paris, France. And they just recently found out that they are going to be the only collegiate choir invited to the 36th Annual International Verona Competition in Verona, Italy, y'all. So they're doing a great gig here at Thacker Mountain Radio to warm up. Y'all please welcome the world-renowned Russ College a cappella choir.
My soul in the bosom of Abraham.
Russ College world-renowned a cappella choir, ladies and gentlemen. Under the direction of Dr. Carl Twiner, the Russ College Choir. Thank y'all so much for coming over. I can't believe we've gone from talking about international arms dealers, having a woman who calls herself Feral Kitty, and now the Russ College Choir. Hey, that's what Thacker Mountain Radio is all about, y'all. We got it all for you. We touch all the bases. One more time for all our guests, if you don't mind. Mr. Ace Atkins, great book, Don't Let the Devil Ride. Feral Kitty, how about that great electronica music? Christina Horn from Knoxville, Tennessee, thank you. Hot Lights is her album, Hot Lights. And one more time for this incredible choir, y'all, the Russ College world-renowned a cappella choir. We'll see y'all next week at the Powerhouse. We'll see you on the radio.
Climb me to the moon, then let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. Mother World. Kiss me, ooh, fill my heart with song, and let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore.
Thacker Mountain Radio Hour's executive director is Lucy Gaines. Our production director is Tim Lee. Our broadcast and post-production engineer is Jeffrey Reed. Our front-of-house engineer is Blake Gardner.
Is over, didn't last. Seems like it just started, and now it's past. Once we were one, now I'm all alone. I guess I'm just lucky that way. Got me a job in the city, I like the paper. I lost that job anyway. Now you find me at the beach most any day. I guess I'm just lucky that way.